don't know what it is, but shit. Oklahoma invented it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Trail Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Crittenden and Brian Clement.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, people who were not even interested in listening to me and Travis last week on the Oklahoma Drill because Brian was not on board. Well, he's back. So that means this is the episode, the podcast for you. This is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill, fueled by OU Insider and the Rivals Network. I am Jesse Crittenden, and I am joined again, once again, after a one-week absence by the lead partner in this duo, the man that we couldn't do this podcast without, and that is Brian Clinton. Brian, you took a one-week sabbatical. I didn't know what to do with myself, but you're back. How does it feel to be back after a one-week absence?
It's good. Yeah, it's, you know, I can't imagine how difficult life is without me for you, Jesse. And I'm so glad that I can bring back that smile to your face. No, it's good to be back, man. I can't promise that there's not going to be some stammering and I could potentially fall asleep on air here, but I'm going to do my best not to. So appreciate you holding things down and glad I can be back.
Well, Brian, just wanted to mention real quick, and I briefly touched on this last week, but for everybody out there, Brian, you and your wife, Taylor, had a beautiful baby boy a few days ago. And obviously that takes precedent above everything else. And it's just also incredible that you're even doing this podcast today. But, you know, I mentioned for everybody to send their thoughts and prayers your way as there were some complications with your new baby boy. So I know there's been a lot of people who have followed along on Facebook. I know they've reached out to you, but just, you know, how are you doing? How's everything there? And you know, anything that would be good to say before we dive into much less important OU football stuff.
Yeah, no, first thing is I want to thank everybody for the thoughts and prayers for Bennett. It's been a very hectic 11 days for his beginning of life, but you know, this time last week we were pretty terrified. Weren't really sure what things were going to look like. Didn't know how long his stay was going to be, didn't know if we were going to have to life flight to Oklahoma City and start a new kind of treatment, but you know, God's really kind of shown himself in this moment for Bennett, and he's had a pretty miraculous recovery and is doing great. He's still probably a week or two away from being able to come home. Mama got to hold him yesterday for the first time, which was incredible. I have not yet been able to hold him because I guess that's off limits for dads for a little bit, but it'll be just fine. We'll get through it and we'll figure things out here. So,
well, we want to, I know you just said it, but you know, last week I mentioned it on the show and you know, I just want to appreciate.
I'm sorry. My other boss is calling me. It's right on cue. So,
okay. Well, man, I appreciate the update you just gave. I'm glad things are, you know, are certainly better than they were, you know, a few days ago. And I just wanted to say, I know I briefly mentioned, you know, your situation last week, and there were a lot of people sending their well wishes, their thoughts, their prayers last week for you and your family. So appreciate everybody out there that sent those as well. Everybody that watched last week, all the OU Insider subscribers, all the YouTube listeners, all that stuff. So And most importantly, Brian, I'm personally glad that you're back with us this week. It didn't feel the same without you. Also, because guess what, dude? In like 9 days, OU football takes the field for the 2024 season. Just crazy. Just crazy. And fall camp has absolutely flown by. And on, what's today, Wednesday? God, I can't even keep track what days it is. It's Wednesday at like 1:40. Last night we got to talk to Brent Venables and four players. Got to talk to Grayson Halton, Michael Tarquin, Bauer Sharp, and Caden Woolard. As OU prepares for, they're going to start opponent preparation, Temple preparation, I believe today. They're starting some opponent preparation, but yesterday brought us some interesting things from Brent Venables. And I think the first thing, Brian, to talk about is the one thing I know everybody's talking about, and that is the battle for the starting kicker spot. That's always at the top of the list of questions every season, you know. But I thought it was actually pretty interesting because Brent Venables said that this race has basically boiled down to Tyler Keltner and Zach Schmidt. And, you know, he said Liam Evans, the walk-on from Moore, has done some really good things. But it sounds like, you know, he's going to kind of have to wait his turn a little bit. And the other thing is that this is a battle that's going to go through the rest of this week. It's not going to be officially announced until the depth chart comes out, probably on Monday. And Brent said that it's very possible that OU is going to need both of those guys this season. But here's the thing, Brian. Before fall camp started, Brent Venables said publicly that Tyler Keltner kind of had the edge when it came to that starting spot. But as Parker, our colleague Parker, reported over at OU Insider VIP board a few days ago, Zach Schmidt's really impressed this fall camp, and I think has made this a real race. And I think, actually, if I had to say right now, I think it's going to be Zach Schmidt as the starting kicker for this team, which I'm sure fans are going to be absolutely ecstatic about. So I don't know. What does this all mean to you? And if Zach becomes the starting kicker, what does that say about him? What does that say about this kicking spot? I don't know. What are your thoughts when you hear that?
Well, I mean, more important than ever, the kicking game will be more important than ever because if you were winning and losing games in the margins in the Big 12, that's going to be just as much, if not more, the case now in the SEC, because you're playing teams that are more talented in some cases than you are. And that's not something you hear very often at a place like Oklahoma. So whenever you have a kicking battle like this going late into the fall camp portions of things, it's a little bit concerning. I mean, if you're an Oklahoma fan, but I mean, look, last year it was a struggle. It was something that we saw Oklahoma struggle with at multiple passes, and I think that it needed to be addressed. Obviously, I think a lot of people assumed that Liam Evans would come in and immediately push for that job, but it actually ends up being the Florida State transfer. Look, I think that the thing to take away from this is if you have healthy competition, and Brent Venables says that he loves where they're at in the kicking game right now, I think that's a good thing. I think it's always good to have more than one guy that you feel pretty confident in pushing out there. And maybe that even gives them an opportunity to have somebody handle kickoffs and somebody handle just the place kicking duties. Who knows what that looks like? So we'll just have to see, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I will say if it does end up being Schmidt that goes out there, it's probably best just to stay off the message boards for a little bit.
Well, and that's what, look, I'll say a couple of things. They brought in Tyler Keltner, and then Brent Venables publicly acknowledging that Keltner kind of had the edge heading into fall camp. That tells me a couple of things. One, they're they were clearly wanting someone else to come in and win the job.
Yep.
And they were clearly taking that spot seriously. And you look at what Zach Schmidt's done over the last couple of years, he's 27 of 39 on field goals the last 2 years. That's 69%, which isn't awful. It's not great.
It's not great.
It's slightly below fine. It's like above horrible and below fine. Something like that. The real problem has been, and I should remember the number. I don't, but last season he was particularly bad on kicks between 30 and 39 yards and really 40 and 49 yards. He just wasn't as efficient as you would have wanted him to be in some situations that look like gimmies. He has made every single extra point that he's attempted over the last 2 years. I don't know how impressive that necessarily is, but I would say I think everything that I've heard and everybody I've talked to has said this has been a kind of a rejuvenated Zach Schmidt this fall camp. I think he finally feels real pressure in a way that he hadn't the last 2 years. And I mean, even in open practice last week, I mean, most of what we got to see was kicks, and yeah, he nailed a 55 yarder. I mean, nailed it. I mean, I think Parker and I were talking. I mean, I think it could have been good from 60 and possibly more. Now look, practice doesn't, I mean, you still got to do it on the field, yeah, but I would say with the context of all of that, that if it is Zach Schmidt that goes out there as the starting kicker week one, that tells me he actually earned the job, because yes, I think in some ways the odds were sort of stacked against him.
Absolutely.
I think the other positive, though, or the other thing, if you're an OU fan that's been unhappy with Zach Schmidt, which is most people, I do think the way this kicking battle has progressed, I think them bringing Keltner in, all of this stuff, I think that goes to show me that if it is Zach Schmidt, once things go sideways, they're not going to be afraid to put Keltner in.
Right.
And I wouldn't be completely shocked if we see both guys at times in the non-conference. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if we see, you know, maybe it's Keltner actually doing kickoffs, or maybe it's him doing extra points, or maybe, like, it wouldn't shock me, but I would say it's probably going to be Zach Schmidt. That's just how it feels. And you know, I think the other thing that Brent said, and this was something that's actually been talked about a little bit more, is the kind of guys he likes at the kickoff and punt returner spots. Now, he didn't specify who's working where, but he did say he named Jahlil Farouk, Billy Bowman, Gavin Sawchuk, Javonte Barnes, Sam Franklin, Brennan Thompson. Those were the guys he mentioned. So if we, and Peyton Bowen, also he mentioned Peyton Bowen. So if we take that in context, Peyton Bowen got a lot of reps at punt returner during the spring. He's actually the only guy outside of Gavin Freeman and LV Bunkley Shelton last year that logged a punt return. Both those guys are no longer on the team. So he got a lot of those reps in the spring and fall camp. He has expressed a real motivation to be on punt return, and people, fans likely remember he was a standout punt returner at Guyer High School. I think he's going to be your starting punt returner. I think it's going to be Peyton Bowen. Now, yeah, at kick returner, Jahlil Farouk, I think, had like all but two of the kickoff returns last season.
Mm-hmm.
I'd imagine it'll be Jahlil Farouk again. And I think the only real question is who's going to get that spot next to him. I thought it was pretty interesting that he mentioned Sawchuk, Barnes, Billy Bowman, Sam Franklin. I mean, some guys that I think are likely to see the field and with some of those guys like Sawchuk and Billy Bowman, those are starters.
Yep.
So this turns into an interesting question, which is, what should the approach be when it comes to special teams and the kick and punt returner spots? Because I think some fans are going to say, well, can't we look further down the depth chart? Why are we going to risk injury? And I have my own thoughts on this, but do you lean more towards that viewpoint Or do you lean more towards the, hey, you just got to get your best guys on the field, injuries be damned, almost?
So this is an interesting, I think this is probably one of those questions that, regardless of your level of football IQ, you're going to have differing opinions on this. I think you could go all the way up to like the NFL, and you see it in the NFL, how certain teams take this approach. But in my opinion, I think you put the ball in the hands of your best playmakers at all times, and you allow them to do what they do and make a difference in the game. And if that means putting a guy like Peyton Bowen out there to return punts because he is special at that, then I think you're shorthanding your team if you're not allowing him to do that. Now, I understand, there are some drawbacks. Obviously, you're putting them in a position to potentially take some hits, especially in the kicking game, where you have so much distance between the defenders and the returnee, or the returner. But I think for the most part, you've got to put your best athletes out there on the field. Now, would I have put Adrian Peterson out there?
Yes. Probably not. All like day, that, returning punts, yeah, all like day, baby.
That would probably, be something that I'd have to have a discussion about. But for the most part, I think that you are much better off putting guys out there that have that playmaker ability in open space, because if you don't, if you neglect special teams, it's going to bite you. Like that does happen. And I think if you're not taking the opportunity to make it up in the margins like that, then you're shorthanding your team.
I agree. And I'm even going to go further on this, because I'm actually going to get on my soapbox for a second. But before I do, Brian, have you noticed, I know the last few days and last couple of weeks have been absolutely chaotic for you, but have you noticed that it is just hot outside? Like, it's like unbearably hot.
It's like sticky.
Yeah, it's like stupid hot outside. Well, that may not change over the next few days, but guess what, man? Mando whole body deodorant is going to be your best friend over the next couple of weeks as we deal with these horrific temperatures. Mando. It's clinically proven to control odor for 72 hours. It's safe for the whole body, pits, package, feet, and everywhere in between. It stops odor before it starts. It's American-made, and it's available in 4 cologne-quality scents. Bourbon Leather, Mount Fuji, Pro Sport, and Clover Woods. Special offer right now for people listening to this podcast. New customers get $5 off Mando's best-selling starter pack with code INSIDER at shopmando.com. That is $5 off their best-selling starter pack with code INSIDER at shopmando.com. So here's the thing, Brian. I understand where fans are coming from, and like, I don't know if there's anything that's more like just frustrating or straight up, I don't even know what the word is. When an important player gets hurt on a special teams play, I don't know if there's anything more deflating than that as a football fan. That's a real thing. So I get that. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea to see if there are guys on the depth chart at certain positions. I mean, cornerback, safety, wide receiver, running back, that maybe have some of those intangibles, speed, quickness, agility, but aren't going to see the field, for offense or defense. I absolutely think it makes sense to see if those guys would fit on special teams. Having said that, when has OU gone into a season or a game in the last several years where they've had the clear advantage on special teams? How many times have they lost because of a special teams disadvantage? Yeah. I mean, OU hasn't had a kickoff return for a touchdown since 2016. That was Joe Mixon that did that. That's how long ago that was. And
I was in college and watched that. Like, that dates me a little bit. I was in college and watched that game. And I remember that's how rare it is. It doesn't happen that often.
Yeah. That was over 8 years ago. And I remember thinking, there was at one point, I think during Lincoln Riley's last season that I really dug through the special teams numbers and how bad they were. I can't remember all those numbers off the top of my head, but I just remember being appalled at how much OU was being outplayed when it came to special teams. I mean, you even look at last season, Gavin Sawchuk's punt return for a touchdown. That was the against SMU or not SMU, sorry, Arkansas State. That was the first one in years and years. But you know how many yards Gavin Sawchuk gained on punt returns on the other 17 attempts last season?
Gavin Freeman.
You know how many yards he gained on the other 17 attempts outside of that game?
Total or average?
Total. 17 combined or 17 total punt return attempts. How many did he gain total? You want to take a guess?
75.
40. 40.
That's not very good, right?
So remember when I said earlier, like above horrific and below fine? This is below horrific.
That's pretty bad.
And I don't even think it's, and I'm not even necessarily digging at Gavin Freeman. I think it's just, there's been, special teams haven't been a priority. Even as kickoff returns have decreased across college football, because I think analytics suggest they're not super impactful. And also rule changes have decreased the amount of kickoff returns. OU still at the bottom of the pack in terms of amount of attempts, in terms of average yards per attempt. I mean, OU's finished in the, like, I mean, I think they were 123rd in special teams efficiency last season. Yep. I think it's about time that OU puts a real emphasis on having game changers and playmakers at those spots.
Agreed. Here's the thing about special teams. Is it an even 33% with the other two parts of the game? No. It's not. Let's not pretend that it's equally as important as offense or defense. But with special teams, if you're average, you're never going to notice. You'll never notice if you're average, but you will darn sure notice if you are above average or below average. Ask Kansas State. It's been a team. That's a team for the longest time. I know that that's going to just irk people on this that are listening to this podcast, but Kansas State has found a way to be above average in special teams dating back to Bill Snyder. They still are that under Chris Klieman. And that wins them football games, just like Oklahoma has lost football games thanks to special teams multiple times over the years. So if you're not average, at least it's gonna show up, and it's most likely gonna show up in the win loss column because that's where close games are decided. So yeah, you need to find a way to be top half of the country, and I think you'd be a lot better off if you're Oklahoma on that front.
No, I agree, and that's why, I mean, look, that's why the starting kicking job actually is important, because you could argue last season OU doesn't lose its two regular season games if they're better in special teams.
100%. I mean,
and if you don't think there's going to be at least a game, if not two, where OU's playing an SEC opponent that's about the same in terms of talent, or maybe OU even has a slight edge, but it comes down to a special teams play or two, it's going to happen. And sometimes it's little stuff along the margins that end up making the difference when you go into a league that is this competitive. I did think it was interesting, you know, because at the last open practice, we saw Andrel Anthony and Des Malone fielding a lot of punts. Those guys weren't mentioned. But I do think even with those two guys and then the guys that Brent Venables mentioned, I think it's clear they're looking at like guys who are first or second on the depth chart at these spots. And I think even Peyton Bowen, who I've already said, and I said last week, I think he's going to play more than 600 snaps this season. I'm calling my shot on that. I think he's the perfect punt returner for this team. And I mean, a guy that wants to do it, has the skills and history to do it. I don't think you can afford to pull any punches. I think that's the overall message here. And I will say also, I think OU going out and hiring Doug Deacon out of San Diego State, who has an incredible track record with special teams efficiency, is helpful, but also the fact that he's going to be able to be on the sidelines during games.
I was about to say that.
Right. I mean, that's huge.
It's one thing to get on the phone and like call up to the guy in the press box or have him like relay those messages to somebody through another coach. But for him to be able to pull guys to the side, especially as you like, that's a guy who has made his living on special teams. I think that's going to be huge for them. It has to be an emphasis. It does. And if you don't think it's important, if you're one of the people on the other side of the screen watching this right now, and you're like, why are we talking about the kicker? If you get to Death Valley at the end of the year, and you got a tie ball game, 3 seconds left, and it comes down to that, tell me it's not important. Like, but, I mean, that's, it's part of the game. So, definitely worth noting.
Or how, I mean, I'm telling you, there's going to be a game, and if you're an OU fan, obviously you're hoping it's the Oklahoma side, where it is a close game in the second half, and a team gets a big kickoff return.
Yep.
Or a punt return, and sparks momentum.
It's it flips the field. When you're playing games that are decided by field position is something that doesn't get talked about enough, and like we could really dive into that if we wanted to, but if you are consistently playing in plus territory, the odds are you're going to put more points up on the board, and fields are flipped in special teams. So like, I mean, it all boils down to putting your offense in good position, and not putting your defense in bad position. It's like, it sounds simple when you say it that way, but when people argue that special teams is inferior, is not important. I just, that's one way I need to know. I probably should just end that conversation and move on.
I am going to, say this real quick before I throw out something that I hope doesn't derail the podcast too much. Luke Elzing is going to be your starting punter. He was great to end last season. He continues to solidify his grip on that position. No concerns there. I think he's going to be great. And this doesn't need to be a whole discussion, but this is if just for the sake of having fun, because it's about to all get super serious starting next week. My hot take is we need to abolish kickoffs. That's my hot take.
Okay.
And people who have talked football with me before have likely heard me say that at one point, because it's the play in football where the most injuries happen.
Yep.
Historically. Right. Two, we've already put rules in place that have removed the incentive to return kickoffs a bunch. I mean, that's why we've moved up where kickoffs even happen. We've moved the touchback spot from the 20 to the 25. I think it's the most boring play in football. And I think we should replace it with, and this isn't my idea, and I can't remember who originally suggested this, so I apologize. Somebody did several decades ago. I think we should replace the kickoff with, once you score, once the extra point happens, the team that just scored gets the ball at like their own 30 at 4th and 15. Now, most teams would just choose to punt there, but it would also introduce the possibility of fake punts. It would introduce the possibility of strategy. Maybe you just need to go for it. It would get rid of onside kicks, which I think are an abomination. That when you really think about onside kicks, they don't make sense. Imagine if you tried to, if onside kicks never existed, and then you tried to implement them now, how stupid they would sound. Yeah. And also punt returns are inherently more exciting than kickoff returns. So most of the time you're still accomplishing about the same goal. You're adding more excitement. I think you're adding more strategy, and I don't know. I think it's just more fun.
I'd be willing to listen to that. I can't say just right off the bat that I agree with removing them, but I do like the fourth. I do love the 4th and 15. I have never heard that. The 4th and 15 on your own 30. I do like that. That's a really interesting concept. That would be a really fun way. And I would almost imagine, especially if you had a crazy good wide receiver on one team that was down by a couple of scores, like that would be a really good way of seeing teams come back late in games. With this discussion real quick, I have to know, do you like where the NFL went with the kickoff? Is that progress with there being more incentive to return and less like injury prone? Or do you think it just, it's all kickoff, it's all stupid?
No, look, I'm mostly being facetious when I say kickoffs are dumb. Like, I understand the purpose of them.
Sure.
I think it's a really hard discussion to have because you do want to eliminate injuries, particularly pointless injuries or avoidable injuries.
Yeah.
And I think player safety should always be the number one goal. At the same time, football is an inherently violent sport. It's an inherently physical sport. And I do think it is pointless to have rules. Not pointless. It is sort of pointless to have rules that disincentivize kickoff returns if we have kickoffs. Yeah, like, why not?
Sense. Yeah, no, that's, you're on base there. I agree with that.
Why not just put the ball at the 25? Yeah. I mean, genuinely, if you're coming up with rules that decentivize those. I mean, OU's been on the lower end of kickoff return attempts in recent years, but you know how many kickoff returns OU had last season? 21. Like, wow. Actually brought it out from the end zone. So in 13 games, they didn't even average 2 a game.
Wow.
When you think about it that way, it's almost more ceremony at this point, kickoffs, right, to me are.
Yeah.
So I do kind of, I think it's a really nuanced discussion that you could really break down the ins and outs of.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think that we're, with as much changes we've seen to that aspect of the game, I don't think that we're that far off from that being a potential reality of it being removed. I mean, it's changed so much just in our lifetimes. So, yeah, you're right. It is more ceremonious than anything right now. So,
well, to bring it back to OU, they are going to have kickoffs this year, and
that much you can guarantee.
Yes, I can guarantee that. And OU needs to find some guys that can make a difference there. I think Brennan Thompson at kickoff is a really interesting.
Love.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you went there.
Yeah.
Woo. Speed and open field are typically a good combination. So, yeah, I like that.
I agree. Also, because I don't know how much he's going to play this year, which leads into the next thing to discuss, which is that Brent Venables said that Angelo Anthony has no limits right now. Now, that is consistent with what we've seen in open practice, what we've heard, which is he's been dressed out and participating a lot in practices. Obviously, it's the huge sign considering he had the season-ending knee injury at Texas last year and missed most of the spring. I got the impression that this is more about how he's medically cleared and less about them trying to push him full throttle.
Yeah.
I do think he'll play week one. I think he's going to be on the field week one. My only wonder, and I don't want to speculate too much, but I do wonder because it is against Temple, which, no disrespect to Temple, but season opener Friday night, OU's first game as an SEC member. OU will probably win that game pretty handily. I do wonder, because to me, I think you can almost kick the can down the road in a weird way when it comes to making concrete decisions about the wide receiver depth chart, because that's been me personally wondering how OU is going to handle all of that. Mm-hmm. To me, you have a ready-made Jahlil Farouk, Nick Anderson, Deion Burks as your starters week one, and you bring in Angelo Anthony for reps off the sideline.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I don't know. Again, not trying to speculate too much. What would you say?
Yeah, no. I like that. And the thing that you said about him being more, this is more about him being medically cleared than them really pushing him. ACL injuries in particular, you hear this all the time, and it's so true. It's such a mental thing. Like, your body can be ready for that and ready to go. And the ACL might just be, it may sometimes, even now with medicine, it's in a better place a lot of times because you strengthen everything around it. But getting your brain to trust that and to break and cut like you want to can be difficult. And so for him to be medically cleared and for them to be, you know, saying he's not held back at all is great. But yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, it feels like Farouk Anderson Burks pretty heavily right now. But again, it's so easy to forget how much of a factor he played in the first half of the season before he went down with that injury. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if come Tennessee, you know, maybe even that Tulane game, if he's not playing a pretty significant role there. A lot of it is also going to really depend on the personnel groupings that you see Oklahoma throwing out, which, you know, I think you're probably going to see 11 personnel more often than not, especially in those first few games if they all go how you would expect, because you're not going to show more cards than you need to. But whenever they really get into the meat of their schedule, I'll be curious to see how much, you know, maybe potentially having two running backs or having two tight ends on the field is going to look and what that's going to look like for the wide receiver reps. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. But for a guy like Andrew Anthony to be getting some go and punt returns at practice last week and Brennan Thompson, I think, again, that just points to if you've got depth, if you've got guys that can make differences there and you really truly believe they're difference makers, put them out there and don't hold them back. And so it's good news. It really is. I'm super, super excited to see what Anthony can bring back to this offense, because particularly in the game against Cincinnati, I just remember just from field level, like it felt like there were a couple times where he really bailed Oklahoma out in that game and they were in a dogfight for a little while. So getting him back and having a guy like that can really burn you deep is going to be good for Jackson Arnold.
Yeah, no kidding. I think the other thing to mention, and this will lead into how we're going to end this podcast, and I didn't tell you we were actually going to do this, so I'm gonna spook you a little bit. Desaun McCullough is still not practicing, still not a full participant. He's not dressing out. You know, this does go kind of against what Brent Venables said at the beginning of the month, at the beginning of fall camp, which is that he was dealing with a toe injury that he didn't think would cost him more than a week. We're out of fall camp now. We're into preseason now, and McCullough is still not practicing. So I don't know exactly what that means, other than my guess will be when the depth chart comes out on Monday, it will be Danny Stutzman and Kip Lewis as your starting linebackers.
Yeah.
Kip Lewis, I think, has really played well in fall camp. I think he's taken the majority of those reps at linebacker alongside Stutzman. I think it's going to be those two guys, and I think it's going to be Kendall Dolby as your starting cheetah.
Love that.
I think that's going to be your three guys in the middle of the defense. Having said that, you know, I don't want to speculate at all about McCullough's availability. Brent said any injuries right now, he doesn't think will be long-term. He said he's confident everybody outside of obviously Jaden Gibson could be available week one. Obviously, I think McCullough could be included in that, but they need him back at some point. But I do wonder if Kip Lewis has done enough to just earn that starting job. You know,
the added weight really, really looks good. Like it translates. He really looks to have picked things up kind of right where he left off last year. He was super impressive to finish out the year. I mean, I would say he was probably one of the more consistent playmakers on that defense to end the year last year as a freshman. So that, like, I was impressed. So I think I would be confident in Kip Lewis taking a big jump. But yeah, getting somebody like Desaun McCullough back when you need him is going to be big. So I would almost say them not rushing him back out there, if it's truly one of those things where they didn't feel like he was going to miss more time than a week and they haven't rushed him back out there, that tells me you've got confidence in the guys ahead of him. Because he is going to play a factor. As long as he's healthy and able to be out there, he's one of your more pure pass rushers in like a blitz situation or trying to get after the quarterback. He has the length and size and the speed to get after the quarterback. So they're going to use him at some point. And if they're not forcing him to get back out there, I mean, to me, that says they feel pretty good about what they have right now.
Speaking of, and I sort of just did this, but I think, you know, OU's depth chart, I'm going to guess, is going to come out Monday before Brent Venables talks to the media for his first official press conference of the 2024 season. We'll come back next week to talk about the depth chart, to talk about Temple, all of that stuff. But before, since we won't meet before that depth chart comes out, we won't meet again before that depth chart comes out, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you to call your shot on one position group, who you think the starters will be, starter or starters will be at that position group for week one. I already said, I said the linebackers. I have another one in mind, but I'm going to let you go first, put you on the spot, because you haven't dealt with a lot the last few days. Your mind's been, it hasn't been busy. You've had a lot of time to think about this, you know.
So I'm going to go out. Spot. I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Yes. Yes.
Jackson it. Arnold's going to start a quarterback.
You stole my joke. You jerk.
Let's see. Well, we talked wide receivers already, so that's kind of out there. I mean, it's pretty clear Bauer Sharp's going to be your starting tight end. Let's go with.
It doesn't have to be a position group. It can be one player.
No, I'm going to go position group. I'm going to go. Okay. I'm going to go with the toughest one. I'm going to take the offensive line.
Ah, I was going to do that. You jerk.
Okay, then.
No. Do it. Do it.
Okay. Okay.
Do it. Do it.
So I'm going to go, Jake Sexton, left tackle.
Ooh.
I'm going to go, Heath Ozaida, left guard.
Okay.
Let's see. Center is going to be Branson Hickman. Fabetchi Wewu is going to be your right guard, and your right tackle will be Jake Taylor.
So we differ on the left tackle and left guard.
Well, you would, I mean, to be fair, I have been out of the loop. So
no,
a little
no.
bit more out of the loop.
I would have said, actually, now that I'm thinking about what you just said, oh boy, you might be right. You might be right. Okay, the only thing, my main question is Tarquin going to start at left tackle?
Hmm.
And if Tarquin starts at left tackle, does that move Jacob Sexton to left guard?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I know.
Maybe, I mean, with how Beanbo goes about things and getting your best five out there, that might be the route. That could potentially be the route.
Ironically, Brent said he was asked yesterday, do you have any idea on a starting five, or is that going to be fluid? And Brent said, the best five. And he said that like so dead, just like no humor, just the best five.
Man, that's funny.
You know what?
You could go defensive line too, and that one's going to be fun.
I like your starting five. Okay. I think you're dead on about Hickman, Wewu, and Jake Taylor. And I do think Jacob Sexton's going to start. I think it's just a question of left tackle, left guard.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. Because also Sexton at left tackle and Ozaida at left guard would make a lot of sense.
Hmm.
Okay, I'm going to go defensive line.
Okay,
I'm going to go to defensive line, and I'm going to say, but this isn't as hot of a take. I'm going to say Dominic Williams and DeJon Terry as your tackles on the interior. And I'm going to go, at least for week one, I'm going to go Ethan Downs and Caden Woolard with Trace Ford, R. Mason Thomas, and P.J. Eddie Bauer all working in quite a bit. I do think R. Mason Thomas and PJ are going to be your third down and obvious passing situations guys. I think those two in tandem are going to play a lot.
You better be careful throwing that up on this podcast.
Wait, why?
You're gonna get screenshotted.
Oh, God, I wasn't even thinking about that.
Anyways, I'm gonna there's one spot on that defensive line. I actually think, and this isn't really a hot take. I mean, you've heard people talk about, I think Jaden Jackson's gonna be one of the ones.
Ooh. I love it.
I think it'll be Dominic Williams, Jaden Jackson, one and two. I think that's your nose and your three tech.
I love that. So, Grayson Halton actually said yesterday that Jaden Jackson and David Stone have really pushed the older guys in that room.
That's fantastic news.
And both those guys have gotten time with the ones. Jaden Jackson in particular.
That's awesome. I am genuinely those might be outside of Taylor Tatum, just because I cannot wait to see him run the football. I think those might be the two guys I am most excited about seeing, like freshmen I'm most excited about seeing.
Yeah.
So
I agree with you there. It'll be interesting to see. We'll know for sure on Monday, unless Brent lampoons us and puts a bunch of oars.
That will happen.
That chart. It's going to happen.
That's going to happen.
It's going to happen. We'll be back here next week to talk about that depth chart and to do our first official Oklahoma drill pregame analysis of the season, of the 2024 season. For a Friday night game. Oh, that's right. We're going to need to get this published, because we have been publishing on Fridays the last couple of weeks. We're going to need to get that pushed to Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. But, hey, we'll be there. We will be there. OU Insider will be at Gaylord Family Oklahoma Memorial Stadium on Friday night to cover their season opener against Temple. We'll be back here on the Oklahoma Drill to preview that game, to talk about the depth chart. Make sure to go over to OU Insider and subscribe. Become a VIP member today. We're actually recording this as a certain 5-star offensive lineman is set to make his commitment. So we couldn't get that on this episode, but you can head over to OUinsider.com or make sure to subscribe to this OU Insider YouTube channel to get all the latest on that and all the latest on the 2024 season. Pretty big one. Until then, appreciate you guys hopping on. Brian, it was good to have you back, and we'll see you guys next week on the Oklahoma Drill.